Welcome to the Haftarah of Parshas Korach. Last week, we left off with a question. Since we suffered terribly as a result of sending the Meraglim in Moshe's day, why would Yeshua resort to this tactic at all? Wouldn't it be better to abandon this approach completely? Perhaps we can answer, based on Rashi and Devarim, Perek Aleph Pasuches, that had we not sent Meraglim, we would not have required weapons to conquer Eretz Yisrael. We would have simply walked in and taken over. We were led by Moshe Rabbeinu with Hashem's providence on the highest level, Lemala Min HaTeva. Once we lowered ourselves to the point of Ashtadlus, we played a role in conquering the land, we had to continue on that plane of existence. Indeed, we find in Chukas, Perikop Aleph, Pasuk Lame Beis, that Moshe himself sent Meraglim to scout the city of Yatzer, and the scouts themselves conquered the suburbs of the city. Yeshua understood from his Rebbe's actions that he too must function within this level of Hashem's providence, and he sent scouts as well. Interestingly, Chazal identify Moshe's scouts as Pinchas and Kalev, the very same men that Yeshua sent. Apparently, once they proved their loyalty with Moshe Rabbeinu, Yeshua preferred to use them again. This week's parsha discusses Korach's rebellion. So the Haftarah also discusses kingship, the transfer of power from Shmuel to Shaul HaMelech. Shmuel was the leader of the nation and the last of the Shoiftim. The people insisted that they wanted a king, and they were afraid of Nachash, the king of Ammon, who was waging war against them. Shmuel anointed Shaul as king, but many did not accept him. After his stunning success on the battlefield, all were prepared to accept him, and Shmuel repeated the crowning ceremony. This is where our Haftarah opens, where Shmuel gathers everyone to Gilgal. He chose this place because it housed the Aron Kodesh for 14 years. When we first entered the land, Shaul was crowned king before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rabbag explains that Shmuel built a Mizbeach there and offered Kabbonis to Hashem. Shmuel said, "Ve'eshma b'kolchem l'chol Hashem artem." The Malbim explains a double expression, that he listened to them to appoint a king to wage war, and also gave the king the power to judge the people, instead of the system of Shoiftim that had existed until then. Shmuel continued, "Va'ani zakanti v'tzavti." In truth, Shmuel was only 50 years old at this time. The Gemara in Tainus explains in Daf Hei Amud Beis that the Kadosh Baruch Hu aged Shmuel before his time. A short time after the events, after Shaul did a chait, Hashem was prepared to kill Shaul. Shmuel interceded, "Ata shivisani leMoshe Aaron, shenemer Moshe Aaron bechanov, uShmuel v'korei Shmoi, ma Moshe tamida Yeshua loy meis bechayov, af Shaul loyomus bechayoi." Hashem agreed with his argument, but could not delay the onset of the Malchus Beis David, which could only begin after Shaul's death. Therefore, Shmuel died at the young age of 52, before Shaul died. In order to prevent people from claiming that Shmuel died young because of his averus, Hashem aged him prematurely, so that it appeared that he was an old man when he died. Shmuel challenged the people, "Have I appropriated anything from anyone? Have I mistreated anyone? Have I accepted a bribe from anyone?" The people responded that no, he had never taken advantage of his position. Shmuel continued, "Hashem bochem ve'ed mashicha hayoyim azeh." He responded, "Aid." Although the simple explanation is that Shaul said aid, the Gemara Makos Daf Chof Gimel Amud Beis says that a Baskel testified that Shmuel was above all suspicion. Now Shmuel rebuked the people. He described all the ordeals we had suffered, starting from Golas Mitzrayim until the present. He mentioned six leaders, Moshe, Aaron, himself, Gidon, Shimshon, and Yiftach. The Gemara notes in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chof Hei Amud Aleph, that the first three men on the list were a much higher level than the other three. This teaches us that one must accept the leader of a generation, even if he is not on the same level as previous leaders. Shmuel's point is that Hashem always rescued his beloved people, and there was no need to panic and request a king to fight against Ammon. Nevertheless, if they serve Hashem properly, the kingdom will endure. Even if they do not serve Hashem, then Hashem's punishment will affect both them and their forefathers. Targum Yonason explains that Hashem will punish them just as he punished their fathers who had sinned. The Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Samach Gimel Amud Beis, however, explains that this refers to the extreme indignity of grave robbery, where even the dead have no rest. Shmuel proved this point by creating a miraculous change in the weather. Eretz Yisrael's climate has a rainy season during the winter, and a dry season from Pesach until Sukkot, when it does not rain at all. Even though it was a dry season, Hashem sent thunder and rain as a sign of displeasure. As the Gemara tells us in Tainus, Daf Beis Amud Beis, rain and thunder during the dry season is a sign of a curse. The people were terrified, saying that their quest for a king was yet another sin. Shmuel consoled them, saying that Hashem will not abandon them. In order to avoid a chil Hashem, this is the same point that Moshe made after the sin of the Meraglim, and Yeshua after the battle of the city of Ai. One question remains. The Torah explicitly states that we should appoint a king in Dvarim, Perek Yudayin Pasuk Tezvav. Why was the request for a king considered sinful? As we have discussed the Machloikas of Kairach, I heard an interesting story from Rabbi Reis Mishlita that he repeated from Rabbi Druk. It's in Darish Mordechai on page 155. He's speaking there about the lav in this week's parsha of not being like Kairach v'adoisai, of avoiding Machloikas. He tells a story that happened in Yerushalayim many decades ago. There was a Yid who had saved up money, and his entire fortune was in something called a golden Napoleon. Historically, a golden Napoleon was a fortune. It was a coin people used in times when there was no banks to wire money. A person would put his life savings into such a coin and travel with it. This Yid had such a coin. He also had a young son who had heard that recently lollipops had been introduced to Yerushalayim, and he wanted one. One day, the child happened upon his father's golden Napoleon, not really recognizing how valuable it was. To him, it was just a coin. He went to Amram the grocer and bought a lollipop with that Napoleon. He came home holding a lollipop. His parents saw him with the lollipop and asked, "How did you get that?" He said, "I bought it." They asked, "How did you buy it?" He answered, "I found this coin in such and such place." Suddenly, the parents realized the golden coin was missing. They ran to Amram and said, "Did you sell our son a lollipop? He gave you a golden Napoleon and you gave him a lollipop." Amram answered, "He did not give me a golden Napoleon. He gave me a plain copper coin, which is the cost of a lollipop." They were indignant. They insisted that their son had taken the golden Napoleon, that Amram had taken it, and he was lying and was a thief. They schlepped him to Bezdin. As is recorded there, each side told its story, and Bezdin paskin that Amram was a moide b'miksas. The lachak understanding of that is not for today, but Bezdin ruled that he was moide b'miksas and therefore had to swear. Amram had no choice. He did not have the golden Napoleon to pay back, so he swore. The city was in an uproar. A golden Napoleon, a child has taken it. Amram the thief had stolen it. Not only had he stolen it, but he had sworn falsely. Needless to say, Amram did not have any more customers after that. The town made a tumult. His business went down. He was mavuyish, embarrassed, and humiliated. He was held to be a thief. A number of months later, a man knocked on the door of the original owner of the golden Napoleon and said, "I have a confession to make." He said, "A few months ago, I was desperate. I had no money to feed my family, and they were starving. I saw your son walking with the golden Napoleon. At first, I thought to myself, I should rescue that Napoleon. He is going to lose it and return it to its owner. So I took the Napoleon from him and traded it for a copper coin. He did not realize the difference. I intended to return it. But then I thought, my family is starving. Let me buy some food. I will make some money one day and return it then." Months passed. I finally had put together the money to return it to you. The man was dumbfounded. He now realized Amram the grocer had been an honest man all along, and he had put to shame for no reason. Said Rav Druk, and those of you who heard him can picture him saying it with fire, "In Shemayim, who gets Gehenim? The owner of the golden Napoleon? He did nothing wrong. He argued in Bezin what he honestly believed to be true. Who gets Gehenim? Amram the grocer? He was perfectly honest, and he was the victim. Who gets Gehenim? The man who took the golden Napoleon? He did something Shaloi Kedin. But Gehenim? He took it because his family was starving, and in the end he paid it back and did tshuva. So who gets Gehenim? All the people in town who made a tumult over a riv shaloi lechem, a fight that was none of their business." The people came along and in some self-righteous flow defended the one they thought was the victim. They are the ones who go to Gehenna. People get involved in machlokes that they have no business getting involved in, they go to Gehenna. This happens all the time in the community, yeshivas and shuls, on the streets and business. It happens when people have machlokes. It happens when people have disagreements. When there's machlokes, stay out of it. Stay away from it. It's a riv shaloi lechem. An everyday lesson for many of us. Have a wonderful Shabbos.